Hello, 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 and welcome to episode 26 of the New Ice City Podcast. I'm your host, The Flying V, a.k.a. Vince Mercogliano of the USA Today Network, and we are back with another episode this week. Our guest will be Rob Reese, who is the fantasy editor at NHL.com. Rob and I actually met on a plane coming back from the 2019 NHL Draft in Vancouver, the year the Rangers took Kaapo Kakko. Stayed in touch a little bit, follow each other on Twitter, and I see him tweeting about fantasy stuff all the time. I don't play fantasy hockey, but I thought it would be kind of interesting to have him come on and talk about the fantasy hockey world's perspective on the Rangers, and we get into the development of young players and how excited fantasy players were for Alexis Lafreniere and a lot of Kaapo Kakko talk. So we'll get to Rob in just a little bit. I also, at the end of the program, have a little bit of a personal announcement I'm going to share with you guys. You'll hear it here first on the New Ice City Podcast, but we'll get to that at the very end. First, we're going to talk about some New York Rangers, and that would start with Tuesday night. Big win for the Rangers, 5-2 over the Caps. There's a lot of doom and gloom when they went down 2-0 in the first 5 minutes, but Igor Shesterkin played incredibly well. The Rangers rallied back, their first third period comeback of the season. They had been 0-10 heading into Tuesday. And then, you know, we saw on Sunday when they got off to a really poor start, a worse start than they did on Tuesday, Sunday in DC, they rallied in the third period, came back, made it interesting, wasn't quite enough. It was too little too late in that instance. But they did the same thing on Tuesday, except this time, rather than being down 4-0, they were only down 2-0. And they get 4 goals in the third period and really get one of their signature wins of the season. Their success against the Capitals has been interesting. They're 4-2 against them this season. They're 6-2 against them in their last 8 meetings dating back to last season. So obviously the Rangers are a pretty good matchup with the Capitals, who had really been rolling coming into this short series. They're in first place in the division right now. So kudos to the Rangers for a good game played. I was in the Garden last night for that one, and it was definitely an exciting one to watch. I think the big takeaways from that game were Adam Fox just continues to make these plays that make your jaw drop. He scored the go-ahead goal on a really awesome no-look pass from Artemi Panarin, but the pass gets overshadowed by what we saw from Fox on the finish. He used his skate to gather the puck, reels it in, and then just everything he does is so calm, cool, and collected. And the way that he just flicked that backhand over the left shoulder of the goalie was really something. I mean, that was one of the highlight goals, I think, of the season for the Rangers so far when you put the whole thing into play, the pass, the way he used his skate, and then the way that he finished. That was obviously a big goal. And now what you're starting to hear a little more nationally, I mean, we've been saying it on this podcast since day one. I've been calling Adam Fox the MVP of the team since 5, 10, 15 games into the season. But now you're starting to see his name come up a little bit in the Norris Trophy conversation. I still think you got to look to a guy like Victor Hedman, who's having a great season again for Tampa Bay, as the favorite. But Fox, could he end up being a finalist if he keeps playing this well? I think that he belongs in that conversation, and it's nice to hear people starting to give him that recognition. Another guy who had an important night was Kaapo Kakko. He's been up and down lately, there's no doubt about it, but since he joined that line with Strom and Panarin 5 games ago, you've seen glimpses, and the third period last night against the Capitals was probably the best period that he's had with that line so far. Not only does he score the tying goal, and that was just a matter of him getting to the net, Panarin and Strom did a lot of the work for him with the nifty passing leading up to that goal, but good to see Kakko get rewarded if you're a Rangers fan. And then David Quinn made a point after the game of mentioning that Kakko had also driven hard to the net, caught the attention of a defender, kind of cleared out the lane a little bit for Adam Fox on the go-ahead goal. So encouraging performance for Kakko. You definitely want to see how he does if he continues to roll with that second line and see what happens as they build chemistry. Right now, that spot definitely looks to be his for the foreseeable future. And then Igor Shesterkin, I mean, the guy has been, since he came back from that groin injury, zero rust at all. It has been a pretty seamless transition. He missed 10 games. He came back, played 2 games against Philadelphia. The Rangers only won one of them, but Igor faced a ton of shots. It was like 81 shots in the 2 games, and he looked really sharp. And then against the Capitals last night, He gives up those two early goals, and you really can't fault him on either one. The first one was a one-timer from the slot from TJ Oshie on the power play, and that was a shot that I don't think many goalies would stop. And then the second goal, it was hard to tell at first from where I was sitting in the press box, but it looked like he had covered up the puck and maybe the whistle was late, whatever. But after that, he shut it down. I think he finished with the game with 28 saves in a row. Really encouraging for what you saw from him. David Quinn confirmed following practice today on Wednesday that Igor will start the first game on Thursday against Buffalo. So that means that coming off this injury, Igor will have started 4 out of 5 games. And listen, from what I'm hearing and from what David Quinn has been saying, I think that unless the Rangers have any reason to be concerned about injury with Igor, you're going to see them give him a good ride and really try to get him on a roll in these final 21 games of the season. I think he will definitely play the majority of those games as long as he's healthy. And that's, I think, an important thing for the Rangers to see because Georgiev has been up and down this season. Kincaid has been a nice story, but obviously you don't look at him as a big part of the future. So I think if the Rangers turn this into a season that Igor can really build on and go into next season as the clear, no doubt about it, not only number one goalie for the team, but one of the better goalies in the league, that would be a huge positive for the Rangers going into next season. And then the last big star of the night on Tuesday night was Artemi Panarin. 3 points for him in the third period. And I think that this should serve as a lesson for everybody who has been twisting themselves into knots, trying to assess blame for every win and every loss. The formula for this team to win is pretty simple. If you get good goaltending from Igor, if your best players like Panarin, like Fox, like Mika Zibanejad, if they play up to their capabilities, the Rangers aren't going to win every game. No team is going to win every game. But they can hang with the better teams in the league, which a lot of them are in their own division. The Capitals, the Bruins, the Penguins, go on down the line. That is the key for this team. And I know that everybody wants to point fingers at the coach and everybody wants to figure out what went so well under Chris Knobloch. And listen, I wrote a column this week where I do think that there are little things that we saw in that stint under Knobloch that maybe David Quinn, watching from afar, should take into consideration. But it's all very minor, and as we've talked about at length, Quinn was really the guy calling the shots and pulling all the strings during that stretch. And if you look at it objectively, you go back to when this hot streak started. It started when Panarin re-entered the lineup. The Rangers played that game in Boston. It was like March 13th or something like that, where they won 4-0. To me, that might have been their most impressive win of the whole month, that 4-0 win in Boston. That was Panarin's first game back. And newsflash, David Quinn was on the bench for that game. He was also on the bench for the next game. And the next game, they lost in overtime to the Flyers, but they did get up a point. They did get a point out of it, and they did it when they found out earlier that day that they were going to have to play without Adam Fox and Pavel Buchnevich because they were on the COVID list, two of their best players. So the hot play had a lot more to do with the fact that A, Artemi Panarin re-entered the lineup after missing 9 games, and B, Mika Zibanejad got scalding hot. So I think if you're trying to tie your head into a pretzel and figure out a way to blame the coach or blame somebody specific for anything that goes wrong and think that that whole win streak was all about the team being motivated or whatever you convinced yourself of during the time that Quinn was out, you're stretching. You're stretching. Listen, we're actually going to talk in the Twitter questions about something that I think that maybe might be a little more fair to question Quinn about. And there are definitely times when any head coach deserves to be questioned. There's no doubt about that. I'm not saying that every move that he does is the right move, but it's been a little much in the last week or so, just how distorted it can be. So that's my thought on that. Last thing, there's really two big stories this week, two big pieces of news that we should discuss. One is the trade of Brendan Lemieux, and one is Vitali Kratsov. Kratsov, a lot of our Twitter questions this week were about that, so I'm going to save him for the back end of the program. So we'll touch on the Lemieux trade right now. The Rangers sent him to the Los Angeles Kings in exchange for a 4th-round pick. There was really not one big reason for this trade, but it was sort of a lot of little things that add up. Number one is the role. Lemieux, I think, when the Rangers acquired him, they knew that he was going to bring the toughness, the physicality. He plays with that edge. He's an all-out hustle kind of player. You respect that. But I think that they hoped that maybe he would develop more of a role, whether that was a guy who could chip in a little offense, which he never really did consistently, or a guy who you really trusted defensively and you could use on the PK, which he never really developed in that role either. So he was sort of this guy in the bottom six who had his moments, no doubt about it, but his game was really more about just pissing the other opponents off, for lack of a better term. He drew a lot of penalties. We know that he did that quite well. And again, he played hard. You could not take that away from him. The dude played super hard. But when you look at the surplus of wingers on this team, not just the high-end guys, which we know they have a lot of, but even the bottom six, there's a lot of guys vying for that fourth line spot right now. The Rangers felt like they needed to make a little room, and it seems that Lemieux drew more interest than maybe others, and the chance to jump on a fourth-round pick was something that they wanted to take advantage of. It gives them some roster flexibility moving forward. One of the things that we touched on the program last week was that the Rangers did not, even though Keith Kincaid had outplayed Alexander Georgiev so far this season, they did not want to put Georgiev on the taxi squad because that would risk another team being able to claim him on waivers. So this gives them the ability, if they need to protect their assets, to maybe carry three goalies on certain days. It also gives them the ability to move up a guy like Kratzoff, maybe move up a guy like Morgan Barron at some point, because they had like 15 forwards they were dealing with at the time before Lemieux got traded. So it gives them a little wiggle room in that regard. And then if you look ahead to the expansion draft, it had become pretty clear that Lemieux was not a guy the Rangers intended to protect. So now, rather than risk losing him for nothing, they end up getting a fourth-round pick for him. So that there's a lot of different reasons, but I don't think there was one big, big reason why the Rangers made the trade. I know some fans are concerned about, you know, the fact that he was the most willing fighter in the lineup. I did the math on this. He had 8 fights in the last 2 seasons, over 90 games. That averages out to a little over 11 games in between each fight. That should tell you that, yeah, well, it's nice to have a guy who's willing to protect his teammates and stand up for his teammates. It does not happen that frequently. It's not something that you keep around. You keep a guy around just for that reason. So I think, again, this is kind of a minor move. A guy that, you know, listen, they lose the physicality. They lose the guy who plays really hard in Lemieux, but they have guys that they can plug and play, and they already have like 5 guys left, even after trading him, who are fighting for those fourth line roles right now. All right, we're going to get to our interview with Rob now. I just want to mention really quickly, because we talk about a lot of different stuff, but this interview was recorded Tuesday before the game against the Capitals. So if you are saying anything like, oh my God, they're saying, you know, Kako hasn't scored that much, he just scored last night. The reason that is because the interview was recorded on Tuesday prior to the game. All right, let's get to Rob, and then I'll be back on the back end with some of your Twitter questions. And now we will welcome into the show the fantasy editor for NHL.com, the host of the NHL Fantasy on Ice podcast, a friend of mine who I met on a plane one time, and that would be Rob Reese. Rob, how are you doing today?
I'm feeling good, Vince. Thanks for having me on the show. Definitely excited to talk some fantasy and some New York Rangers hockey.
Yeah, I was telling you before that I don't play fantasy hockey. I play fantasy baseball, play fantasy football. I had a fantasy baseball draft last night. So I'm into it, but like covering the team and being so busy at this time of year, it would be hard to keep track of that, I feel like. But I did want to ask you to come on because I want to talk about it a little bit. I guess for starters, though, kind of on that fantasy note, tell me about the fantasy hockey world. Like, is it growing? And how did you get into it to where now it's basically all you do?
Well, it is truly all that I do. and the good news, I guess, is that it is growing. It's definitely, I mean, it's never going to be as big as a fantasy football. Let's get that out of the way. Yeah. But I do think it's carving out a nice niche in the hockey community. And it's one of the things that I think, like, I know you cover the Rangers, watch the Rangers. I watch a lot of the Rangers too myself, but it's one of those things where you kind of just start to watch, you know, you'll find yourself watching, you know, a Toronto Edmonton game. You'll find yourself watching, you know, a San Jose game at night because you need that one more goal from somebody else. And it's just one of those things that gives you a little bit out of incentive, you know, to follow a little bit stuff that you probably wouldn't, you know, care too much about otherwise. So that's the good news about fantasy. I definitely think that, you know, there's 2 formats now. One is season long. So, you know, draft you know, before the season starts. And then there's another daily fantasy, which is growing rapidly too, which is set a new lineup every single day. So if you were betting on Mika Zibanejad to snap his goal scoring streak earlier in the season when he was snake bitten, you could have played him every single night and not gotten anything. And then the past week or two, you would have gotten everything and then some back.
So I thought it was interesting when we were DMing, you described the Rangers as both intriguing and frustrating. And I think that that explains how a lot of fans who just watch the team feel that don't even play fantasy. But when you say that from a fantasy perspective, I mean, because if you look at last season, I'm sure guys like Panarin and Zibanejad were highly productive fantasy players, but they had their ups and downs this season. Panarin missed some time. And then I'm sure you're also speaking about some of the young guys who you hoped had upside where they maybe haven't had the production to match it.
Well, that's a head scratcher, you know, talking about Kako and Lafreniere, that neither of them has made an immediate impact in the NHL. Like, that's what makes me sort of question what's really going on there, because the chances of neither of them being productive the rookie season is close to zero, in my opinion. Like, you just, that just doesn't happen with players to that pedigree. And it's not like both of them are busts. They're not. I mean, if you watch the team every night, like, Kako shows flashes of being a dominant player. Lafreniere can fly. He can be physical. I mean, they have all the tools to succeed, right? So that's from a fantasy lens, one thing that would definitely be labeled as frustrating. The other is, yeah, I guess Mika Zibanejad, when he started off just a little too slow, I guess the COVID thing, you know, might have taken some longer recovery, whatever it was. I don't want to speculate, but, you know, maybe he lost his confidence, whatever it was. But, you know, he's still returning a crazy amount of value just on his past 2 weeks alone. So if you held on to him, you're definitely reaping the rewards. But, you know, I think the Rangers as a whole, I mean, when I look at the stats, like Ryan Strome, I like the player a lot. I like him on the first power play unit. Like, he looks great there, but he just shouldn't be leading the team in points right now, you know, no matter who missed time. So that's kind of the where I get that little bit of frustration with that team.
Yeah. Well, so for me, I'm thinking like about my baseball draft last night. A lot of times you want to draft the guys, especially, I don't, do you do keeper leagues in yes, hockey fantasy?
That's why the Rangers with Fox, Kako and Lafreniere are like the team, and Chesty too.
Yeah, exactly. So you want to get those guys early, and that way you can retain the value and keep them over a long time. And sort of as they take off, so will your fantasy team. So have you heard from, it sounds like you have heard from a lot of different fantasy players who maybe jumped on those guys early in drafts and then have been disappointed at the return?
Yeah. I mean, I've heard of people cutting Kako and Lafreniere in keeper leagues, which to me is a little bit harsh. You know, this is a 56 game season. There was a limited training camp. You know, the guys didn't have time to adjust, right? I mean, it's just hard. I think you kind of put that human element into it as well. And it's like, you know, and then they get trials on the in the top six, and then doesn't stick. And then the next night they're playing in the bottom six. And it's just hard, you know, especially when you're playing every other night, you're playing top dog teams for the past 15 years, like the Caps, the Bruins, even the Islanders. Give the Islanders a lot of credit too for being a tough team to play against. Obviously they don't have the ceiling that the Rangers do, but they do have a tight system that nobody wants to face them. So I just think all those factors definitely contributed to sort of the slow starts from Lafreniere and Kako in their careers. But, you know, it's still in a keeper setting. I would absolutely love to have Kako, Lafreniere, Shesterkin. Adam Fox is now a top five, in my opinion, a top five asset in any keeper league, no matter your format. So the future's still bright. I just would have liked to see a little bit more flash and pizzazz from them this season.
I think you got to play the long game with them. It's like, if you've made it through this stretch, hold on to them. And whether it's this season, next season, at some point it should pay dividends to kind of go through these struggles with those guys and wait it out. You touched on one of them with Fox, but I want to ask you, like, who have been the best Rangers fantasy performers so far this season?
Well, in my opinion, Shesterkin, even though he missed some time, like, he's been so good. I mean, even when he has like a tough outing, like, he still made a lot of saves against Washington, even though they lost that game, right? When they made the late push. I mean, he's still retained a lot of value no matter what they're winning or losing. So I would say Shesterkin's kind of been the rock. I have him in one of my leagues, and he's just been a guy I can count on every time he starts. He's going to have a good quality outing. That's usually the indication too, that you're going to have value year over year in fantasy. Like, when Vasilevsky first came in the league, like, that's how his starts were. Even if the Lightning lost, like, he would still retain value. So definitely Shesterkin. I think Adam Fox, we knew, you know, coming into the season, if Tony DeAngelo ever lost that spot on the top power play, Fox was never going to let that go if he got that promotion. Sure enough, it all worked out for him. you know, both real hockey and fantasy hockey. And then I have to say Mika Zibanejad too, just because his upside in this last month of the season, I think, is so high. If he can have a couple more multi-point games like this, everybody's going to forget, you know, that he was cold to start the season if he can finish strong. So I did make a case on our podcast the other day that the Rangers would make the playoffs. This was before they had two disappointing losses over the weekend. And I think now I'm going to have to get out of that take, but we'd definitely be curious to hear your thoughts on that, Vince, because you probably saw that coming, not to get too high on this team, you know, after they raffle off a couple of nice wins.
Yeah. So I picked them to finish sixth in the division at the beginning of the season. So I'm not surprised by anything that's happened. And then if you look at the laundry list of things that we didn't expect to happen, Panarin having to miss 9 games for that leave of absence, the Tony DeAngelo stuff, Mika starting so slow, different injuries and COVID stuff. I mean, a lot of teams have had the COVID stuff and injuries, but the Rangers have had like all this other stuff going on that I think has definitely been a detriment to them. But what we saw during that stretch where it sounds like you and I know a lot of other people got high on them was that there is the potential for them to string some things together. And we've seen the defensive improvement, which I know probably doesn't register for the fantasy world too much, but they have been better defensively. Igor, when he's been in there, has been very good. So if they can get that offense back to the consistent level that they are performing at last season at the end of the year, then to me, yeah, they have the potential to make a run. But I just think it's so tough right now. They're 5 points out, 22 games to play, but Boston, which is the main team they're chasing right now, they've played fewer games. So if it's based on points percentage, Boston's pretty well ahead of them. They're also behind the Flyers, who are fifth in the division right now. So I think it's a stretch for them to really make a playoff run, but they're keeping it interesting. Like they're not completely out of it. So at least you have some intrigue as far as the playoff race is concerned. But I think for the fans, the main thing that they're focused on, and it's a legitimate thing to be focused on, is what is the development of these young players? Are they springboarding themselves where you feel good about where they're at the end of this season? And then hopefully next year is when you would think the team would be in a better position to maybe take off. And I think next year is when the pressure to make the playoffs probably ramps up a little bit.
No question. And it is funny that like Keandre Miller and Lindgren have taken, I mean, Keandre Miller has made an immediate impact, which is like baffling when you consider that young defensemen now take a few more years than they, you know, than forwards do in this league. And even goalies now are coming in sooner than defensemen. And so he's made an immediate impact. And then Lindgren looks pretty good too. And you're kind of like, wait, it's funny that these guys are playing so well. And then we're not really hearing from Lafreniere and Kako, but I think it's a good problem to have, right? To be a little bit ahead of where they should be defensively, because the offense is going to come. It's just a matter of time. It's a matter of getting the chemistry and cementing it. And I think when you're starting, you know, a season potentially in late October versus a rushed, you know, put together season in mid-January, I think you just have more time to go through those bumps and bruises. And we even saw it last year with the Rangers too. Like when they got hot, they stayed hot. When Shesterkin came into the league, he just captured that number one spot and didn't let it go. So it is interesting, I think, though, when you're talking about like the futures here. I don't know what I would project for Kako, and I don't know what I would project from Lafreniere, just because we haven't even seen like that big multi-point game from either of them where they just look dominant like every shift. So that's where I do hesitate a little bit to get ahead of myself. But it's something I'm going to track closely, because they're still going to be, you know, top assets in keeper leagues.
So that raises a good question. Like from a fantasy perspective, how hard is it to assess what to expect from a prospect coming in? Because you might have a guy who tore it up in juniors or who was really good in Europe. But a lot of these guys, what we've seen, especially with the Rangers, is there is a process to the development. It's not necessarily an overnight thing. We have seen it with some guys who they step into the league and take off right away. But from a fantasy perspective, like how are you weighing that? How are you weighing like how quickly you expect them to make an impact? Because for fantasy, if they're not putting up points, they're probably not that much good for you.
Well, excluding the Buffalo Sabres here, and I don't want to take shots at Dahlin because it's not his fault, but you know, even Dahlin was an attractive keeper league option before the wheels completely fell off for the Buffalo Sabres this season. So when you do get high, you know, selected one or two overall, you're always going to have fantasy owners' attention because that glimmer is there. It's like a shiny toy. You're like, ah, that's the best thing out there. And in most cases, most often it is. And I still think that it'll be that way with Lafreniere, who in left wing in fantasy is so rare. Like if you have a good dominant left wing that can hit too, because hits are a standard category now in fantasy, like that's what exactly what you want. Like Brady Tkachuk, when he got drafted for the Senators, like people in fantasy knew right away that like whether or not the Senators were going to be good, Brady Tkachuk was going to return major value. It's kind of the same with Lafreniere, who I believe has higher upside than a Brady Tkachuk, a lot more scoring upside at least. Like you're still going to select him in the first two rounds no matter what. And then I think for Kako, that's the only one I have a little bit more questions now about, because like you can see that the skill's there. Like he can toe drag anybody, he can win pucks in the corner, he can make a seamless pass in the slot, but it's like you don't see him finishing some of the chances that I think he could be finishing, or you know, his one-timers aren't connecting, whatever it is, and you're like, okay, is that going to change, or are we just going to maybe see like a 20 goal guy? Whereas like re-upping Chris Kreider now in hindsight looks pretty good, because he's like a sure hand 25 goal guy with some edge that can play on the top line with Mika.
Yeah, I think from a non-fantasy perspective, a lot of the Kako stuff comes down to confidence. We saw him with a breakaway against the Caps the other night, and we know he has the skill to bury those opportunities, but he just looks a little indecisive sometimes in those moments. So you would think it'll turn around at some point. I don't know if he's going to be an all-star caliber, top fantasy level type of guy in the long run. But I do know that there should be some level of confidence that he's going to score more than he is right now at some point. With the other top guys, like the non-prospects, I'm curious, after the way that Panarin was great all year last year, and then Mika finished on fire, like were they first round type picks for fantasy going into the season?
Yes. Panarin top five. He was at 3, 4, or 5 in almost every draft that I did. And then Mika, yeah, Mika was top 15. I think I got him at 19 in one of my leagues, which I was shocked. Honestly, I was dumbfounded that he was even there at that point. I think his average draft position was around 11 or 12. So that's teetering last pick, in the first round and first pick in the second round. So yeah, people were super high on him. And I think the most DMs I've ever gotten was this season in the first like 4 weeks asking, what should I do with Mika Zibanejad? And I'm like, you have to hold on to him. If you leveraged that kind of draft capital for him, you can't cut him, because as soon as you cut him, he's going to get going and then he's going to tear away anybody else that you would have picked up on the waiver wire in fantasy. Like no one's going to come close to what he can provide for you if he's going. Now, I think he's a 40 goal guy over an 82 game season. I think just shy of that. I would say comfortably 35, you know, with a lot of assists, a lot of beautiful helpers, but it's really all about their power play now. And I mean, with Fox, like they have so many good wrinkles. Honestly, he's in a Cale Makar type conversation, Quinn Hughes type conversation, even with the big dogs like John Carlson and those guys and Victor Hedman that can quarterback a power play better than anybody. Like Fox is up there now automatically. So I think that's going to be the player, Vince, that you're going to see in fantasy now. People are going to probably go for maybe mid round three, definitely early round four. And that is just a trajectory that, yeah, while he had the pedigree, it's like to do that in fantasy at that position is really saying something.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So with the categories, you touched on this a little bit. Is it almost, I guess it can vary on the league, obviously, but is it, I would assume it's mostly focused on traditional stats, but like, are they working in advanced stuff? Like, are you looking at expected goal rates or anything like that for fantasy points? Or is it strictly points, assists, hits, you know, kind of the more traditional stuff?
Yeah, it is the more traditional. It would be fun to join a league, though, that did that. I mean, if they had quality starts for goalies, if they measured that, like Igor would be, you know, right up there, cream of the crop type stuff. I would like to see that, honestly, because I do like those advanced stats. I'll be candid about that. I don't think they're always applicable. Like, for example, like if a team like the Flyers had good advanced stats, I'd say you're kidding me. Like if you watch them play, like there's nothing attractive about that team right now. And I don't want to be too harsh, but let's just be
the Rangers fans
that.
Will like hearing that from you. So.
Yeah. I mean, when they were winning games early in the season, not to going off on a tangent here, but like they were winning games like with 17 shots on goal total. And you're like, this is not sustainable. This is not Malkin and Crosby that can finish off one timers. They only need 15 to 20 shots. Like that's not what they are. So that was definitely, we could see right through that. But so in that context, I would not love advanced stats to be counted in fantasy, but right now it's good. I think that they put hits in there because it just gives like the well-rounded players. Here's a buzzword for the Rangers fans. Like Tom Wilson is a guy that in fantasy is very valuable because he hits, you know, even if he's on the shelf for, you know, 5-7 games for a suspension, you're still getting hits. You're getting points. It's like the Brady Tkachuk, the Matthew Tkachuks, Dustin Brown's another one of those type of players. Like those are the really good guys. I was actually surprised, by the way, too, about the Brendan Lemieux trade, because he was kind of a guy that was tough to play against. He looked like he had a little bit more to give offensively, and he could hit and was hard to play against. So that one actually wasn't super fantasy relevant, but did throw me for a loop there.
I'm surprised that he would be – I mean, I guess because of the hits, he would be a more valuable fantasy player. And do you get points for penalties drawn?
So normally you can do that depending on your league manager. PIMS used to be the standard stat too in fantasy, but I personally don't like playing that way because you can pick up guys like, I think Brendan Dillon's one who always has like 100+ PIMS a season and somehow he's like fantasy relevant. So, and yeah, Radko Gudas is another one. And you're like, no, like this is too much. This is too much.
Yeah. That doesn't seem like something that you necessarily want to reward guys for, but I wasn't too surprised at the Lemieux trade just because the Rangers have so many bottom six type forwards and they have so many young prospects coming that I think they were going to have to find a way to shave a guy or two off. And obviously they were able to jump on the opportunity to do that there with him. I know fans are definitely concerned a little bit about the lack of grit, if you want to call it that, in the lineup without him. And obviously he was their most willing fighter, but I think that the fights, I actually did the math. I mentioned this on the podcast too. I did the math. He averaged one fight in the last two seasons. He averaged one fight for like over every 11 games played. So it's not like it happens often enough for you to feel like you need to keep him in the lineup just for that. But yeah, I'm surprised that he would even be a fantasy guy in general. How many Rangers are fantasy relevant? Like half the team?
I mean, heading into the season, we had a ton of them in our rankings on NHL.com, like a ton of them. Now I would say probably 6 or 7. Buchnevich is another one that like he always had the tools, right? Like he always looked like he had promise, but now this season he's actually had the consistency. So he's certainly up there as well. Ryan Strome's a great streaming option. So essentially like if you needed, you know, like a bench option that can come in and get you some points here and there, some power play points, he's a great one. So you have Fox, Buchnevich, Shesterkin, Zibanejad, Panarin, and then, you know, a couple streaming spots, I would say too, like Kreider is definitely one. I've always been a big Chris Kreider guy in fantasy because of his hits coverage. Colin Blackwell's pushing it. He's had a great season. I guess that's maybe part of the Brendan Lemieux trade. Like Blackwell's been a good player for them surprisingly this season. And then Kratsov, he's one that like we're kind of keeping our eye on, hoping that he gets a shot. And if he does, it wouldn't surprise me to see him be more productive than Kako, but that's probably not saying much, I guess, either.
I was thinking about him because I'm wondering, like, with all this prospect hype and the glimmer and the stuff you were talking about, are people anxiously awaiting for when Kratsov gets put in there? I think you will see him play at some point. I don't know how productive he's going to be right off the bat, but that's another one of those shiny objects, I think, that people are probably wondering, is he going to pan out? Would he be a valuable piece to add for the latter portion of the season here?
And I should be clear too, like it's not just the Rangers that have problems. Like there can only be so many cooks in the kitchen too. Like look at the Lightning. Like you're looking at 6 guys from them, maybe 7 or 8 if you get into like the Yanni Gourdes and like, you know, the third line, but that's just the way it goes, right? Even with the Avalanche, like you're looking at the top 6 guys and beyond that is rare. But we did think for sure that you should take Lafreniere and Kako heading into the season. Like I was pretty high on Kako having a bounce back. I thought one of him or Hughes, like, was we were at that draft together, right? And I'm like, these guys, like just watching them play, they were electric. You know what I mean? And then Hughes had a great start to the year. And I'm like, okay, here we go, here we go. But then kind of fell off too. So I don't think it says anything about Kako or Hughes because there's no way that both of them are not to their draft pedigree. I think it's just getting the opportunity, getting the consistency. And then you touched on the confidence aspect, which is probably really underrated for young players too.
Yeah, absolutely. All right, look, before I get you out of here, quick question that popped into my head as we're talking here. What's more valuable for a fantasy goalie? A guy who faces only 20 shots but saves like 19 of them or gets a shutout, or is like the quantity better? Would you rather a guy who faces a ton of shots even if he's, you know, giving up however many goals?
Ooh, so that it's kind of depends on who else you have. So in fantasy, you want three goalies. You want your workhorse guy. So let's use Vasilevskiy as the obvious example. Okay, then you want a guy that's a quality starter, like a Shesterkin. Sorokin is not there yet because he doesn't play enough, but you can get the drift, like someone that's going to win you 80%, 70% of your games. If they don't win, they've got above a 920 save percentage, which is like the golden ticket in fantasy now. Mm-hmm. And then your third guy, you want a guy with some good upside. Now, that upside could be on a bad team that gives up a lot of shots. You're always going to want some shots faced because that is a category of saves. But I'd rather have like an Ilya Samsonov because the Caps tend to give up, you know, 25-ish shots. Like, he's a good example. Like, I don't think he's going to blow you away stats-wise, but you know what you're getting. Same thing with the Minnesota goalies. Like, Kakanen has been great this rookie season because their defense is so sound. Same thing when Cam Talbot starts. Like, you know what you're going to get. You know they're only going to face 20 to 25 shots. They're going to win more often than not. Like, that's what I personally like. Now, other people roll the dice. They'll want goalies to see 35, 40 shots like a Thatcher Demko. But for me, like, that has the potential to just come off the rails completely for the Canucks, which it kind of did this season.
Interesting. Yeah, I've played in fantasy leagues for other sports where it's like, you know, some leagues reward quality over quantity or vice versa. So I was kind of curious how you would answer that one as we were talking about the goalies. All right, Rob, well, I appreciate it, man. This has been interesting. Maybe I'll have to try to join a league next year and juggle that during the season, because I do like playing fantasy sports for sure. So this has been interesting. I hope everyone enjoyed it. And on your way out, you want to plug anything you got coming when the podcast comes out, anything like that?
Yeah, just, you know, if you are wanting some fantasy advice, just check us out on Apple Podcasts, NHL Fantasy on Ice. We're definitely probably going to buy back in major to the Rangers hype heading into next season. So hopefully we can touch base in the preseason and see how you're feeling about some of these guys having some bounce back seasons.
Yeah, man. Let me know anytime.
All right. Thanks, Vince.
All right. Very much appreciate the time from Rob on that one. I'd be curious to hear how many of you play fantasy hockey. It's not something that I get a lot of questions about, but I would imagine that, you know, the big diehard fans are involved. You know, obviously that's all Rob writes and talks about on his podcast and everything. So there's clearly a market for it. And, you know, like I said to Rob, I think I'm considering maybe getting into the game next year. So maybe let me know if you got a good league for me to join. All right, let's move on to the Twitter questions, the final segment of the show here. And we are going to start with what was by far the most frequently asked question of the week. We always seem to have one of these frequently asked questions each week, and I try to start with those when I can. And that is about Vitali Kratsov. How will he be used? When will he get in? Yada, yada, yada. The question about when he will get in, we don't know. We actually ended up talking to David Quinn today, and I would say half, if not more, of the questions were about that. We definitely followed up and tried to kind of nail down some answers. We did get him to talk about it at length, but he still isn't giving necessarily a timetable. And listen, you understand the position he's in. Number one, as he noted today, this was the first time that he has actually had a practice with Vitali Kratsov since he returned. Kratsov has been with the team for about 9 days now, but they've only had two full practices in that span because the schedule is just so crazy. So the first practice was with Knobloch when Quinn was still in COVID protocol. The organization had been very upfront from the beginning. This is no surprise that they wanted him to get a few practices and that they wanted him to get some work with Quinn and the main coaching staff before they put him in. So I was not expecting him to play in any of those games against the Capitals. I knew that was not going to be the case. Then, though, as they head to Buffalo, they'll be playing the Sabres on Thursday and Saturday. Now you're starting to wonder, like, okay, when is the time? Quinn basically said they don't have a time, and he noted that they will get him in. I've heard this emphatically from not just Quinn, but from other people in the organization, that they did not bring him over here to not play in any games. The question is, when will that start and how many games will he play? I asked Quinn that today pretty specifically. I was like, listen, you know, you say you want to get him in a game, but do you feel like you need to see several games? Do you need to see some kind of sample size to really get a true evaluation and know what you're dealing with going into next season? And the other part of that equation that I asked him about is, do you feel that he needs to play in a top nine role? Do you feel that putting him on the fourth line with guys who don't have the skill sets that would complement him well could be a detriment and maybe not give you the true evaluation you're looking for. So for the second part of that question, he said, yes, we absolutely understand what his skill set is, and we want to put him in a position to succeed. So he pretty much said, yes, when he does play, it's not going to be in the fourth line role. I know there's been some debate out there about if the Rangers are utilizing the fourth line properly, but the fact is, when you look at their options for the fourth line, you're talking about Brett Howden, Kevin Rooney, Phil DiGiuseppe. These are not guys that are going to make for the most comfortable partners for Kratsov. These are not guys that are going to feed his skill or that he'll be able to feed and set up for opportunities in the way that he would if he's playing with some of those top nine guys. So it's funny sometimes. This is another one of those twisting your brain into knot situations here. Everyone's mad that he's not getting an opportunity, but at the same time, and you're saying, oh, well, you know, put people on the fourth line. It doesn't matter. You just got to get him in there. But at the same time, we know that if he was on the fourth line playing limited minutes, that would not be a situation that a lot of fans would be happy with. You know, the fact is the fourth line guys, if you look at the personnel that they have for those spots right now, those are defensive guys, PK guys. Those aren't the kind of guys that you want Kratsov to play with. So I think you should be encouraged to hear Quinn say today that their intention when he does play will be to put him in the top line. I mean, in the top nine. My position on this is as follows. Totally, as I said, understood that he wasn't going to play right away. Totally understood, wanted to get him some practices. That's fine. That's completely understandable. I believe that if there was a time that you could pinpoint the best position for him to succeed, I think that he should play Saturday. Now, I wrote about this today, so go to loha.com/sports/Rangers to read all my full thoughts on this. But the gist of it is that Wednesday was his second full practice with the team. He'll get another full practice with the team on Friday while they're in Buffalo. For Thursday night's game, you understand that they're coming off of a big win. They're not going to change the lineup. But at some point, to get him in there, unless injury or COVID happens, you're going to have to take somebody out. And that most likely, as I wrote today, is going to be Julian Gauthier, because if you look at the top nine right now and the six wingers that are in the top nine, the only one of those guys who has a chance of being demoted is Gauthier. So unfortunately, Kratsov's ice time is going to come at the expense of Gauthier. It's not as simple as some people think, like, oh, just take DiGiuseppe out and there's your spot for Kratsov, because again, you don't want him on the fourth line given the guys that he would have to play with. So it's probably going to come at the expense of Julian Gauthier, but I think for me, that would be worth it. And if you look at the situation in terms of the position to succeed, Buffalo, we know, 18 straight losses, by far the worst team in the division. I feel like Saturday, at that point, he'll have a couple practices with Quinn. By that point, he will have been with the team for almost 2 weeks. I feel like that is a good game to get him in because it's a chance for him to play against. You know, you want to take every opponent seriously. I know the Rangers probably wouldn't publicly say this, but your softest, easiest opponent, put him in there against that lineup and see what you got. At that point, the Rangers will have 20 games left in the season. Saturday will be 20 and counting. So if you're going to get him in there, I think it needs to be soon because, listen, the games are ticking off the calendar right now. So if you wait another week or two, like if you look at the schedule, when they leave Buffalo, I believe they play, yes, two games against the Penguins, then two games against the Islanders. Those are difficult games. So those games might not be the best way for him to debut either. And then you're looking at, I guess, the next real window would be they have four straight games against the Devils in mid-April. And so I think at the absolute latest, that would be where you see him get in. But for me, given everything that happened last year, given the disappointment that you know that he dealt with, things we've talked about at length before, I don't see why you would risk any of that at this point. He had a good season in the KHL. He's done everything you've asked of him in the last year. I believe that the Rangers should put him in on Saturday. That's my belief. Now, is it a travesty if they wait a few more games after that? No, I don't believe it is. I want to make that very clear. But if it were me calling the shots, Saturday would be the game I would pick. All right, let's go to the next question, which comes from Charger J, who asks, hi, Vince. Hi, Charger. It would seem Brendan Smith would make sense for a contending team. What are your thoughts on the possibility the Rangers trade him at or before the deadline, and what would be a realistic return? So I'm working on a trade deadline preview that you guys will probably see up on the website at some point next week. But my general overview is that I don't think the Rangers are going to be very active at the trade deadline. We'll dive into specific players and all that. But Smith is a guy that maybe there could be a possibility that a contending team sees him as a bottom pair defenseman option for them and is interested. So I wouldn't rule out the possibility of him being a guy that the Rangers will shop around at the trade deadline and could maybe go. If you do that, though, as far as the return, I wouldn't be expecting much. You're probably going to get less for him than you did for Brendan Lemieux, who you got a fourth-round pick for, so like maybe a fifth or sixth-round pick. It's not going to be a lot. But you offload some salary. You get a minor asset in return, and this is the final year of Smith's contract anyway. It's an expiring contract, so it's not a huge burden for another team to take on as long as they have the cap space to fit him for the rest of the year. I wouldn't rule that one out for sure, but I also don't think that he's like a definite guy that's going to get traded because I don't really think the teams are going to be knocking down the door for him. All right, final question comes from Immortal Lou 30, who writes, care to share your contract predictions for the big four restricted free agents, Igor, Booch, Hedl, and Lindgren. So, yeah, the Rangers, they're going to have a lot of cap space opening up. I wrote about this in my Lemieux story this week. If you take Lemieux's salary off the books, which obviously you do, if you assume a buyout of Tony DeAngelo, the Rangers are looking at including the performance bonus cushion. And, they could sign other prospects. Nils Lundqvist, by the way, I have a story on him coming out, so look out for that one. Roughly what I'm looking at based on the math at this point is about $28 million in cap space going next year. So the Rangers have ample space. We've talked about the possibility of them seeking a trade for a center. I still think that will be the case. But they also got to pay their own restricted free agents. I'm very interested to see with all these guys whether they go bridge or long-term. Now, with Booch in particular, because he's eligible to become an unrestricted free agent after next season, I don't think a bridge deal is happening. They've already done that once with him. With him, I think it's either you lock him up for 3+ years, or there is a possibility that they trade him, although as I've mentioned to you guys before, I think it's less likely than it was in the past because he's proved to be pretty valuable for them. For Booch, I don't know. The salaries are really hard to guess on, so I'm not going to go too crazy with giving you super specifics here, but I'll try to give you little ranges. I could see Booch maybe ending up in the $5 million range. Maybe he would push for something similar to what Mika Zibanejad got a few years ago. His average annual value is 5.35. But Booch is, he's been a top nine forward for them. So I think that he is, if you get him for under five, if it's around the Strom range, which is 4.5, I think that would be a pretty big win for the Rangers. But my rough guess for Booch would be about five. Lindgren definitely deserves a raise. The question is how high. I'm working on a feature about him right now, too. I'm getting to plug a lot of my stories that are coming up right now. But Lindgren definitely deserves a raise. He's been a top pair defenseman for them for the last 2 years. The question is how high. I looked at the Brady Shea contract from a couple years ago. The Rangers went to $5.25 million for him. I don't think they're going that high for Lindgren. I don't think he's in a position to get that. He has no arbitration rights. I'm thinking with him, it would be more in the $3, maybe $4 million range. But you never know because he would obviously argue, I've been a top pair defenseman for you guys for the last 2 years. But again, he has no arbitration rights. So I could see maybe something like a bridge deal with him. Philip Hedl, he should be the cheapest of the group, maybe $2 million-ish. The Rangers feel really good about him and they like him. We've talked before about him being a guy that could be included in a trade if you're looking at a Jack Eichel type of guy. But I think he'll be the cheapest of the group, maybe $2 million-ish per year range. I don't know. It could be a little higher than that. And then Igor is the final one. He's the big question mark. If he crushes it down the stretch, I could easily see him getting over $5 million a year. He does have arbitration rights. I think what this is an interesting situation for the Rangers is because if I were them, I would be thinking, can we lock him up long term before his price goes really high, up into that Henrik Lundqvist $8 million plus a year type of range? So if I were the Rangers and you can get a deal done for something in the $5 million range, if you're giving him however many years, that would be something I would be very much interested in. He might be asking for more than that. I don't know. I haven't asked his agent or anything like that lately. But Igor is kind of the big question mark here. Igor and Booch to some degree, because he's more of a veteran and he's getting closer to unrestricted free agency. But Igor and Booch, I think, are interesting because you could see both those guys pushing for $5 million plus a year. And then Lindgren, Hedl, they might be in the bridge deal category. But we'll see. Those are four really important guys for the Rangers, and they're going to, I'm sure, try to figure out a way to keep them all. All right. That's going to do it for this week's Twitter questions. Now it's time for a little life update for you guys and a little update on some things that are going to be happening in the next few weeks or so. And that is that we are having a baby. Not me, of course, my fiance. And we are super, super stoked about it. We've been doing so much stuff lately. And the excitement is getting real now because we are less than 3 weeks away from the due date. The due date is April 18th. So I wanted to give you guys a heads up, for one, because I love you guys and, you know, want to keep you apprised of what's going on. And obviously, you know, you guys aren't going to be in the hospital with me or anything, but I will be sharing the experience and little bits and pieces here and there, I'm sure, on social media. But the plan, as far as workflow goes, is that once the baby comes, I'm obviously going to take a little time off. And with it being the 18th, the Rangers' last game is May 8th. So basically what I wanted to brace you guys for is there may come a day, or there will come a day, I should say, in the mid-April range when I'm going to fall off the map. And so don't be tweeting at me to go do your job. I'm going to be doing a much more important job during that time. And the loose plan is, you know, knock on wood, everything goes smooth, baby's healthy, mom is healthy, that 7-10 days, whatever feels right at the time. I'm not going to put a definite timetable on it, but my plan is to try to come back for the final week or two of the season, see the season through. Obviously, I'll be doing everything from home at that point. I actually was at the Garden on Tuesday night for the game against the Capitals, but that will be the last game that I attend this year. One of the silver linings of this setup this year is that we get to do everything from home. And if there was a year that I was happy about that, it's this year, so I can be home and be able to help out as much as possible and be with my fiance and the baby. So I will be covering everything from home from here on out. I will still be in constant contact with the team, obviously. But with us getting so close to the due date now, the last thing I want to do is roll the dice, whether it's because of COVID or whether it's, you know, being at Madison Square Garden when my fiance goes into labor. So I'm going to be covering everything from home from here on out. And then when I return for that final week or two of the season, I'll be doing the same thing. You know, if the Rangers end up going on a playoff push, we'll have to reassess. But if they don't, I'll stick around for that last week or so of the season, do the exit interviews with the players and the front office and everything, you know, write some stuff for that week or so after the season to kind of put a bow on things. And then the plan is to take a chunk of my paternity leave, like mid-May into early June. So I'll be off the map for probably 3 weeks then. And then the rest of my paternity leave I'm going to save for August when the NHL basically goes into hibernation. So that's the plan. As I said, we're super excited. I've been over here strapping in baby seats and figuring out how to do all that and building strollers and building diaper changing tables. The last thing that's sitting behind me right now that I still need to do is the crib. So, you know, wish me luck on that. But I can't tell you guys how, I mean, this has been like a surreal year in so many ways. But this news, me and my fiance have been joking with everybody that we've been responsible for delivering good news during a year of a lot of bad news. And, you know, being a dad is something I'm still trying to wrap my head around, but it's something I've obviously always wanted to do and couldn't be happier to have this experience. And so I just want to be upfront with you guys a little bit, not only about how exciting this is, but also about the fact that, listen, I got some stuff I got to take care of and I'm going to be off the map for little periods. And, you know, that's just going to be the way it is because there are some things that are more important than hockey and it's good for everybody to keep that in mind. So I'll keep you guys posted. Obviously, I plan on doing probably at least two more podcasts. You know, who knows? Again, things could change in a moment's notice. But right now, it's looking like things are trending toward the due date of the 18th. So I will keep you guys apprised of all that. You might see like a red alert from me when we're heading to the hospital. And then, like I said, I'll be off the map for a little while and I'll be back. So that'll do it for this.
I will keep you guys posted on all the baby updates in the upcoming episodes. But for now, I hope everybody enjoys the rest of their week, and I will talk to you next week. Unless a baby comes before then, in which case, see ya.